This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth. It's great to be with you. News continues to break tonight, and that's tonight in Eastern Europe, and daytime, obviously, in the United States of America. And elsewhere around the world. And of course, many of you are listening to this program archived. That's what's great about the internet. You not only can hear the show live when you desire, but you can also hear the program rebroadcast at any time you wish. It's a tremendous power. It's a tremendous power of persuasion, too, when people can see data, refer to it, replay it, check out the sources, read the items talked about that are in the newspapers and the magazines of America or anywhere else around the world, and then go back and think about the issues presented. And today, I think I'm going to give you a very thought-provoking program, a program that deals with some of the critical issues facing America, facing the world, and dealing with the problem of Jewish supremacism. I know, you're going to say again, that's Duke's favorite subject. He always talks about that issue. Well, I think it's the overwhelming issue in the world. I think it's the issue that affects all others, especially the survival of European mankind. Now, as you probably know, the president of Iran, a man who, the way, was popularly elected by a vast majority of the people, unlike President Bush, who didn't even win a popular majority. So when Bush starts talking about democracy and freedom, this is a country where there is a democratic form of government, where people are allowed to vote, and the special interests have far less control in that country than America, which is really controlled by special interests. I can tell you, I worked in the legislature of the United States of America. I never took a penny of PAC money, but PAC money is nothing really more than a legalized bribe of congressmen and senators. And, of course, the special interests have a great bit of power in addition to whether or not they can supply you with money. They also can threaten you with their power in the media. And this is especially true, of course, of the Israeli lobby that has so much influence both in politics, media, government. And those three processes, those three entities can have an enormous effect on the political future of an individual. It's just incredible. If somebody's in the party, they can call in their chips with the people they influence and make sure you don't advance in the party, or you're not favored in the party, or endorsed in the party, or they don't play ball with your legislation in the legislature or the Congress or whatever body you serve in. If you are running for office, they can affect your contributions. Not only can they drain and keep you from getting many contributions, because as said in the Washington Post, 50% of all the presidential contributions are in the Democratic Party are coming from Jewish sources. And they went on in that article that I mentioned here to talk about the incredible Jewish influence in the Republican Party as well. And it seems this is the case in practically every race around the country. The biggest donors are Jews, who are less than 2% of the population. And if you go against them, you not only do not get that support, but they will, with a vengeance, support your opponents, no matter who they are, no matter what the issue is, because for them the overriding issue is the interests of Israel, is the agenda of Israel. Well, let me go on into the meat of the article. The Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and let me say that again. The Iranian president, Ahmadinejad, if I can pronounce that properly, had a recent interview in the leading magazine in Germany, and that's Spiegel. and which means basically mirror. And the article and the interview is quite amazing. Let me give you a couple of quotes from the article so you can get a gist of what it's all about. Here's Spiegel, quote, "Even though no Western scholars harbor any doubt about the Holocaust, Ahmadinejad, quote, "but there are two opinions on this in Europe. One group of scholars or persons, most of them politically motivated, say that the Holocaust occurred. And then there's the group of scholars who represent the opposite position and have therefore been imprisoned for the most part. Hence, an impartial group has come together to investigate and render an opinion on this very important subject because the clarification of this issue will contribute to the solution of global problems. Under the pretext of the Holocaust, a very strong polarization has taken place in the world and fronts have been formed. Normally, governments promote and support the work of researchers on historical events and do not put them in prison." Spiegel replies, "Who is that supposed to be? What researchers do you mean?" Ahmadinejad, quote, "You would know that better than I. You have the list. There are people from England, from Germany, France, from Australia." Spiegel, "You presumably mean, for example, the Englishman David Irving, the German-Canadian Ernst Sundell, who is on trial in Mannheim, and the Frenchman Georges Thiel, all of whom deny the Holocaust." Now, that's the quote I brought out of Spiegel. And by the way, these men don't, quote, deny the Holocaust. They don't deny that there were atrocities against Jews. They deny some aspects. And I shouldn't say deny, because deny is the wrong word. Deny is like you're denying a crime that you committed or denying something you did wrong. Johnny denied he stole the cookies. They're not denying. They're questioning certain aspects of the official story. And all through history, generally speaking, over time, things are revised with time. And there have been many atrocity stories in history that have been very sharply revised and reduced. For instance, the French Huguenot, the original story was for many decades, in fact centuries, that there were hundreds of thousands of Huguenots that were murdered in France. And of course, the latest information is, and the most complete scientific and historical information is, that the murders, although heinous, were far less. It was in the thousands, not the hundreds of thousands. And that's a big difference. Some people might argue, well, you know, doesn't matter whether it's one or whether it's 1 million, it's still a crime. Well, it is a crime, but there is a difference in numbers, because if you start to go in numbers and you have to compare with other numbers, and you find out what makes this particular event special. Now, although President Ahmadinejad has been slandered as an extremist and anti-Semite, I hope you will read and think about the linked interview in Spiegel. And you can find that link on davidduke.com, www.davidduke.com. In it, he does not deny the Holocaust. He simply says that we cannot know the truth about this tragic chapter of the Second World War if we're not allowed to hear different points of view. Revisionists don't deny the Holocaust. That is, they don't deny that atrocities were committed against Jews and that many Jews died in the war. But they do question the Holocaust numbers and whether Germany had a plan in place to exterminate all Jews in Europe. And they contend that there are many parts of the Holocaust that are absolutely incorrect and untrue. Now, even many mainstream historians admit that there's no smoking gun as to such a plan. And the revisionists suggest that millions of survivors of the German camps are prima facie evidence that no plan for total extermination was in place. Revisionists also suggest that atrocities against Jews are vastly exaggerated, such as exampled by the alleged numbers of deaths at Auschwitz, in which officially went down from early claims of over 10 million to claims posted at the camp for decades that 4 million perished, to the current posted plaque at Auschwitz that claims 1.2 million died there, and finally to figures as low as 470,000 by the most respected Holocaust authority on Auschwitz, French researcher Jean-Claude Pressick. Pressick was commissioned by the Beatty Klarsfeld Foundation to refute revisionists. He wrote the Holocaust historian acclaimed book, The Technique and Operation of the Gas Chambers, and the revisionist Professor Robert Farrison, a person I know quite well, I visited him in fact in Vichy, wrote the following. And by the way, Farrison was a professor of classics at the University of Lyon, very famous, very brilliant professor, who has dared to come out and offer his opinions on the Holocaust, and it's caused him to lose his position, to be reviled in France, to pay huge fines in court, and he's also suffered terrible physical attacks. This very kind and gentle and brilliant old man who's been attacked physically a number of times in the course of his truth-telling. Here's what Farrison wrote. At the end of Alain Resnais' 1955 film, Nuit et Brouillard, Night and Fog, which even today is constantly shown in all the schools of France, the number of deaths at Auschwitz is given as 9 million. Quote, 9 million dead haunt this countryside, unquote. However, 10 years before, at the Nuremberg trial, a document which the tribunal took judicial notice set this number at 4 million. In 1989, Jean-Claude Pressick reduced the probable Jewish dead count to a number between 1.5 million and 2 million. In 1993, he reduced the count to approximately 630,000. In 1994, in the German edition of his book, he went to a number between 470,000 and 550,000, and consequently, he has been silenced. And he accepts this silencing. It is the revisionists who will not be silent. They will persist in posing questions and offering their answers. What is the total number of deaths at Auschwitz? Is it 9 million, as it is even now taught to the children of France? Or is it as low as 470,000, as J.C. Pressick now thinks? The revisionists, research in hand, have for years said the number is 150,000, and they argue this was primarily caused from the privation and epidemics in the camps, primarily due to the devastation at the end of the war. So we see from the beginning that the revisionists who were demonized by the establishment and the media were far closer to reality of the Holocaust than the Holocaust story that most people learn of millions gassed at Auschwitz. Even the chief authority at Auschwitz, who was in the pay of the Jewish Holocaust organizations, has himself said that the so-called gas chambers at the camps, which they showed to tourists as the original authentic gas chambers, were in fact fakes built after the war. And the chief authority, who was in the pay of the Jewish Holocaust organizations, the late Jean-Claude Pressick, in his last calculations, is much closer to the revisionist estimates than the Holocaust story that's still learned by the public in school, in plentiful magazine and newspaper articles, in documentaries and commentators. Only persons, this is Farrison writing, only persons indifferent to facts and figures could claim that all this is of no importance. Revisionists also point out that Jews were not the only ones who suffered atrocities in the Second World War, a war that resulted in the deaths of 64 million people, mostly civilian non-combatants, including tens of millions of women and children. What about the atomic bomb dropped on the cities of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and the firebombing of cities such as Tokyo and Dresden? Acts that burned alive hundreds of thousands of elderly, of countless numbers of women and children. Why are these not viewed as war crimes? Why is the ethnic cleansing, rape, and murder of 7 to 11 million Germans in the East at the end of the war not a crime worthy of the attention given to the Jewish losses? Why is the greatest mass imprisonment and murder of all time, the Soviet gulags, and the extermination campaigns such as occurred in Ukraine, not worthy of hardly any media attention and focus. Could it be that the dearth of coverage on these greater atrocities, as compared to the media saturation on the Jewish Holocaust, could it be that's explained by the disproportionate Jewish ownership and influence in the American and the world media? Could it be fueled by the fact that the constant repetition of the Holocaust story is essential for material and moral support of the Israeli apartheid state? A Jewish racial state that's murdered, tortured, or ethnically cleansed hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, while at the same time evoked endlessly the crimes against Jews during the Second World War. Of course, the only way to know the truth about the tragedy of what is today called the Holocaust, the capital H, is by honest research and historical debate. Such cannot happen when there is no freedom to offer a dissenting opinion, such as exampled by the injustice delivered to the world-renowned historian David Irving. Irving, whose books are available in virtually every university library in the world, and who is now in prison in Austria with a 3-year sentence for simply voicing an historical opinion in the Auschwitz controversy back in 1989. An academic climate in which an historian or researcher can suffer imprisonment, or at the very least academic censure and disgrace, for simply voicing a politically incorrect, well-reasoned opinion, certainly cannot give people much confidence in the popularly proclaimed Holocaust story. Irving was imprisoned for simply voicing his opinion at a lecture that the gas chambers claimed to tourists in Auschwitz to be authentic are in fact fakes constructed after the war. As I said earlier, that exact fact has been admitted by Dr. Franz Piper, who is in charge of the museum and historical record at the Auschwitz Historical Memorial Camp today. President Ahmadinejad, in the interview, repeatedly makes the logical case that the truth about the Holocaust cannot be really discerned, accurately discerned, without freedom to research the issue and voice dissenting opinions. He also points out with clear logic that even if the Holocaust story were true, there is no justice in making the Palestinian people suffer for it. He shows how Israel is the real terrorist state, complete with assassination, murder and torture, ethnic cleansing and aggression and occupation against its neighbors on a massive scale. He asks, how long should the German people face humiliation for supposed crimes not committed by the living German population? Spiegel repeatedly spoke of the, quote, guilt, unquote, of the German people, the collective guilt of Germans, etc., etc., etc. The Iranian president declared that this guilt is imposed on the German people by the influence of the Zionists, who are powerful in the world's media and have, in effect, subjugated the German people. Indeed, I also don't go along with this collective guilt story, especially for crimes committed by earlier generations. Let me give you an example. Would Spiegel ever dare to suggest Jewish guilt for historical wrongs? For instance, should Jews feel guilty, all Jews feel guilty for the ethnic cleansing of the 800,000 Palestinians from their homes in the creation of the Jewish state? Should Jews feel guilty about the fact that most Jewish organizations around the world supported the predominantly Jewish-led Bolshevik Revolution and the Jewish-led Cheka that killed tens of millions of people? Should Jewish people be humiliated and made to feel guilty and in effect punished for the clear cases of blatant genocide boasted about in the Torah, killing every man, woman, child, and animal of the hated Gentile kingdoms? No. No Spiegel editorial would ever suggest there should be Jewish guilt for anything, and especially not Jewish collective guilt. but somehow they find it proper for the German people to be humiliated and punished on a continual basis in the service of the interests of Israel. The fact that a head of state has breached these issues in the most popular magazine of Germany is an incredible breakthrough for the cause of truth and freedom. I can't help but think that millions of Germans will read his words and begin to challenge the lies and deceptions of 60 years of occupation of both their country and of their minds. Of course, it is not just German minds that are occupied. We won the war, but partially as a result of it, the American media and government became occupied by the same entity. In America and the rest of the world, in our own media, we are frequently assessed with guilt for not preventing the Holocaust by not earlier launching the bloody, murderous war that devastated Europe. No, my friends, it's not just Germany. It is also we that need liberation. It is odd that someone who is so hated by the media and the government establishment, the president of Iran, is contributing today to our own freedom. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you go to my site, listen to that link, go to the link, read the interview, and the more and more I read about the Iranian president, the more I tend to respect him. He seems to be a man of honor. He has been lied about so much. The other day, the press repeated the lie all over the world that Iran was forcing Jews to wear yellow stars in their clothing, a la Nazi Germany. It was a complete and total lie that came out of a Jewish newspaper in Canada. Also, the lie has been stated, that it was stated in the New York Times and many other papers, that when he made his speech, that he called for wiping Israel off the map. Destroying Israel, wiping it off the map, when he didn't say that at all. He said that he believed that God's wrath would come upon Israel and that Israel would fall. He didn't say anything about wiping Israel off the map or Iran would destroy Israel or devastate Israel or Iran should attack Israel or go to war against Israel. Nothing of the kind. But that's typical of how the media distorts the issues and the ideas of the day. He spoke a different language, so most Americans who obviously do not speak Farsi or the language of that country had no idea what he was saying. And most Americans, when they read the paper, if they see quotes of a national leader, of a president, such as this individual, Ahmadinejad, if they read this something as a quote, they tend to believe. It'd be hard for them to believe that the media would actually lie about the translation and say something so shocking and terrible and for it not to be true. Well, they lied about, again, the Stars of David that are supposedly being forced to put upon Jewish clothing. That's all a lie. And this, too, is a lie. They distort things, ladies and gentlemen. If Israel has atomic weapons, why shouldn't Iran try to pursue atomic weapons? I don't like the idea of Iran having atomic weapons. I don't like the idea of Israel having atomic weapons. In fact, Israel's even threatened Europe before that, you know, Europe has got to stand behind Israel or they could very well launch some weapons at us. Israel has attacked America with terroristic attacks, such as the Levant Affair, such as the attack on the USS Liberty, and devastated us by their treachery in cases such as the Jonathan Pollard case, and in many other instances that we don't have time to go into today, but they're there for your research when you get the time and the opportunity. But this is a great interview. I think it's a tremendous opportunity for people to learn. And it goes to what I've been saying. When the president of a country says things like this, that there's questions about the Holocaust, when the president of the country says that, points out that people are in prison and there's no freedom on these issues and you can't arrive at freedom unless you do have that, it comes back to us. I really believe that the way the problem is going to be solved of Jewish supremacism is truly a worldwide effort. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been great to be with you today. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. And until then, I hope that all of you will every day spread this message, spread these ideas and values to family, friends, co-workers. Don't go and work. If it's going to cost you your job, Don't go putting stuff on the bulletin board. Do what you've got to do to feed your family and take care of yourself, or get that advanced degree at that university. And there's something all of us can do. But everyone should contribute. Everyone should work hard. Everyone should, at least on a low-key basis. Of course, it's much better if people do such as I do. They get up openly and honestly and talk about these issues. They run for office. We need a lot more people to run for office. We could be winning some major elections in this country if we did. But all of you have an obligation. If you believe what I'm saying here and you understand what's happening to our heritage and what's going on in the world, this clash of civilizations, this bloodbath that we are hurtling toward in the hands of these Jewish extremist neocons and Jewish these incredible supremacists who seek to subjugate us according to their will. I read their material. I don't think the world that we'd live under in terms of their subjugation would be a very fine world to live in. And we have to stand up and do something about it now if we're going to succeed. We need to act politically and socially. I think we should keep our efforts law-abiding, but I certainly am going to do everything I can to support those who talk about the truth and bring the truth to the public at large. Thanks so much. I'll see you again tomorrow night. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.